Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Excellencies and distinguished delegates, I thank you for the invitation to address the Council and touch on some critical issues in South Sudan. I'll provide a brief update on the situation in the country, as well as United Nations efforts to protect civilians and build durable peace as per our mandate. As we approach the end of the rainy season, South Sudan remains beset by social, economic and humanitarian challenges. The government appears emboldened by its recent military gains, including in some key strongholds of the SPLA in opposition loyal to leader Riek Machar. Deep mistrust of military forces, exacerbated by human rights abuses, fuel flights into neighbouring countries. Across the country, the opposition remains deeply fractured and has suffered significant military setbacks in recent months. At the same time, the economic crisis is further fueling public frustration and undermines the government's capacity to deliver governance and services to its people. In many cases, civil servants have not been paid for over 4 months, and salaries to security forces, in addition, are also delayed. Localised conflicts continue to flare, their impact greatly magnified by automatic weapons and affecting areas outside of the central conflict. Now there is growing discussion about moving swiftly to elections. I continue to stress to my government counterparts that elections must be inclusive, credible and fair, but they also should represent the consolidation of a genuine peace process. Mr. President, with others here today, I remain deeply concerned by the humanitarian situation. There is a conflict. This is a conflict where the greatest number of casualties are civilians and not combatants. UN agencies assess the total number of people in need to be 7.6 million. The burden that humanitarians and donor countries shoulder to support these people with food, healthcare, and education is enormous. The recent humanitarian response plan budgeted at $1.6 billion and so far is 66% funded. And I must underscore that without this humanitarian support, thousands of people would simply not survive. The number of people displaced in South Sudan rose to nearly 4 million during the first half of this year. Of these, 2 million have fled to neighbouring countries, Uganda, Sudan, Ethiopia, Kenya, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. And I want to express my appreciation to those countries for shouldering that burden. I continue to applaud the efforts made on the ground by our humanitarian partners who reach millions of people and the most vulnerable people in the country. However, in critical areas, often at critical times, communities cannot be reached because access has been denied. And these include areas of the Greater Upper Nile, parts of the Equatorias, and areas south and west of Wau, where active government military operations against SPLA and opposition continue. Humanitarian partners were only in the past month able to reach the populations of Bagari, for example, outside of Wau, after being denied for almost 1 year. It's sustained and regular access is what is required and needed. The splintering of opposition forces has had a negative consequence on humanitarian efforts. For example, the World Food Programme's regular convoys to Yambio, which is about 2 days' travel from Juba, now requires 13 different permissions from armed groups along its route. Increasingly, combatants are shifting into criminality along major roadways, with civilian and aid convoys being a target. 2 weeks ago, a driver for the International Committee of the Red Cross was killed when his relief convoy was attacked in western Equatoria. His death brings to 18 the number of aid workers who have been killed in South Sudan just this year. Government officials need to take a more positive attitude towards our humanitarian partners, whom they often blame for creating a negative international perception of the country. Removing numerous bureaucratic impediments, including additional taxes and fees on humanitarian organisations, is required to acknowledge the valuable work that they carry out on behalf of the people of South Sudan. As UNMISS, we are working hard to support our humanitarian colleagues. Our modus operandi is to be robust, to be nimble, and to be proactive. We have provided surge support to help protect key humanitarian facilities, such as in Bunj in the northern part of the country. But sadly, our missions also included evacuating personnel during active fighting. I anticipate that while we respect each other's mandates, this collaboration will intensify if security trends continue. Members of the Council, we are far from the conditions for safe return in most areas, but we are continuously looking to seize opportunities to support communities in returning to their homes where this is possible. UNMIS will soon open a permanent presence in Yei and reinforce our presence in Torit and Yambio, all of these places in the Equatorias to the south, to deter violence and human rights abuses and build confidence for people to return to their homes. The small Malut protection site in the north is closing in coming weeks in line with the desire there for people to return to their homes. And we're looking at downsizing protection sites in Wau and then possibly even Bor. We are working closely with our humanitarian partners to align our efforts so that people have a real choice to return home. The quality of services inside the POCs and in outside community needs to be looked at to provide more balance. If we have a first-class medical facility inside a POC and no medical support outside, it will clearly deter people from returning back to their homes. These efforts will also coincide with our own UNMIS efforts to increasingly project our peacekeeping forces from static duties out into communities where they are most needed. But ultimately, this movement critically depends on how the government and opposition forces behave. Where there is discipline, the results have been encouraging. But where those forces continue to prey on civilians, the POC, the Protection of Civilian Site, will remain a necessary refuge. Meanwhile, increased efforts are being made to identify malign and criminal elements inside our sites. Identified perpetrators and combatants will be ejected to reinforce the civilian character of the sites. Mr. President, I want to briefly turn to the deployment of the Regional Protection Force. While the government has officially repeated its acceptance of the RPF, and UNMIS has closely adhered to the government's clearances and protocols, the positioning of the RPF in relation to the Juba Airport, including at the mission's adjacent Tom Ping base, remains a vexed issue. The RPF is clearly and unambiguously set out in the resolutions passed by this council. Together with my force commander, I am engaging with the government in discussions over unresolved issues and will reach out to EGAD and AU to meet with the chiefs of defence staff from the EGAD RPF troop contributors and the government in Juba as soon as possible. We must also remember that the situation on the ground has changed significantly from a year ago when two separate armies were positioned inside of Juba. Today, the security threats in Juba, we believe, are more likely to come from civil unrest sparked by potential economic collapse. However, the intensity of fighting in the Equatorias was not present a year ago. And as a consequence, from these areas is where the more than 1 million people who have fled to Uganda have come from. The bolstering of UNMIS forces with the RPF as it gradually arrives will enable UNMIS to project further into those areas in line with its protection of civilian mandate. Mr. President, let me make a few observations about the current political situation. The space, I believe, for compromise over the 2015 peace agreement is narrow. The parties have shown little interest in engaging in serious negotiations on the way forward, despite the various initiatives aimed at finding a political solution to the conflict. The central conflict resolution strategy must be the political mediation via the EGAD High-Level Revitalisation Forum. The UN, for its part, will continue to support the national dialogue, with both caution and conditional on it remaining transparent and inclusive. I acknowledge that the process might appear partisan to an increasingly disillusioned and fractured opposition, but in past months, it has provided a useful platform for open and highly critical discussion. By engaging with it, we hope to encourage a process aligned with best practice while still it being nationally driven. There is both a humanitarian and a political urgency to our meeting here today. In the past week, there has been renewed enthusiasm and solidarity for the revitalisation process. There are only a few months remaining in the transitional period stipulated under the peace agreement. External momentum to support peace is needed. It is critical now that the international community shows a unity of purpose to support an implementable peace process that leads to credible elections in due course, but only after a period of transition marked by inclusivity and stability. I am committed to continue that engagement, together with the Special Envoy for Sudan and South Sudan. We continue our good offices to engage all parties to meaningfully participate in the political process, and we will continue to work with the AU High Representative Alpha Konari and support the IGAD and its Special Envoy Ismail Wace, together with the President Mahai with JMEC, to hasten preparations and convene the high-level revitalization forum to bring the parties together. We will bolster collaboration between the region, the African Union, IGAD and the UN to prevent forum shopping by parties. In all of this, South Sudan needs the unified efforts and attention of the Security Council, building on the AU Peace and Security Council collaboration and its communique of a few days ago. We are all aware that the country risks remaining a source of continued regional instability and a drain on international resources. The wider region has a critical role to play in convincing the parties of the need to compromise and find peaceful solutions. We collectively will need to deliver a clear and unified message to the parties on the way forward. The consultations of the past few days here in New York have been encouraging, but we are backing a process to which we urgently need to add substance. I count on your continued support. And finally, I want to just thank you for your continued backing of UNMISS over the past week. It's been truly gratifying. Thank you very much.